Hey everybody, it's Josh Rutledge, your co-host for Fearscape Paranormal Podcast. Thank you so much for listening. If you'd like to support us more, please head over to our website, fearscapepodcast.com. There you can click on store and browse some really awesome t-shirts and maybe pick a couple up, or even go to our Patreon page and see how you can support us monthly. We love bringing you awesome content just as much as you like listening to it. Enjoy the show.
Hello. I'm so glad you could join us. I hope you brought your blanket to hide under. The spooky crew is going to discuss things and events from other realms. Ghosts. Cryptids. Aliens. Be sure to hold your blanket extra tight as the boys take you deep into the Fearscape.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to another frightening episode of Fearscape Paranormal Podcast. I am your host, Stefan Gearhart, and I am here to bring you the spookiest of the spookiest, and I am joined, as always, by the man I would consider a tasty treat, my co-host, Josh Rutledge.
I am the Mike and Ikes of podcast.
No, Jujubes. You're the Jujubes. You get stuck in my teeth all the time, and I'm always digging at you to get out of there, but yet I still enjoy you.
Yeah, well, you know, this is getting to be almost a Santosh episode, so we got to be careful here.
Yeah. You're stuck in my teeth. You pull my fillings out. It's essentially what you are. Thank you guys for tuning in to another fun episode. We've got a really interesting topic tonight. We are going to be discussing a very interesting man named John Teeter. And I don't even want to give away the stuff that he was into. But those of you that are listening and already know, kudos to you. And those of you that are tuning in and don't know who he is, get ready. Because this is something else.
Yeah, researching him was like a rabbit hole experience.
So, this is going to be a very, very fun, interesting topic. One that we didn't think would result in such a deep rabbit hole and has become a biggin, as my uncle would say.
Well, and so as Aerosmith would say, I think.
Yeah, sure, whatever. So let's go ahead and move into our segments. So the very first segment, as always, is the psychic word of the week.
And now, the psychic word of the week.
So we've got our psychic word or words for the week coming from the Encyclopedic Psychic Dictionary from the June Bletzer, PhD. Rest in peace, honey. And what we do, we bibliomancy this thing up and we just spin the, I keep wanting to say spin like it's an old card file or something, but we flip the pages.
Yeah.
You did it this time. We landed on something that I feel like we need to do both of them.
Okay.
So the first one is teleportation, psychokinesis. And then the second one, and you'll understand why I want to do both, is teleportation, telekinesis.
Okay.
So I would say we're looking at the two different sides of the same coin, maybe. So let's start with teleportation psychokinesis. This says, to levitate an article or one's own body and transport it horizontally through the air by using mind concentration, performed by one who has a well-disciplined mind and the understanding of the gravitational field, takes many years or incarnations to accomplish. Two, one who is in a state of spiritual ecstasy during the peak experience when one is free from materialistic thoughts and thus free from the law of gravity. The body becomes buoyant, lifts off of the ground, and floats through the air. Authenticated experiences have been reported that a priest floated up the aisle of his church during a service once.
Hmm. So it's basically the difference here is that it's the actual movement. So you can have the lifting effect, but the difference here in this definition is that you're actually moving.
Moving, yeah. I mean, you got the fizzy lifting drink, right?
Right.
But you've got a radio control as well.
Right.
The next one, of course, is teleportation telekinesis. So let's see what the difference is here. This one says to levitate an article or one's own body and transport it away from the area horizontally through the air in its original form, accomplished by a medium synchronizing with the etheric world intelligences while in a deep trance so that they can use the medium and the sitters, if necessary, ectoplasmic energy, usually performed in a seance room, but articles have been teleported miles away. For example, a dish of candy moving through the air unaided and stopping at each of the sitters for them to help themselves. Levitation is accomplished as the step before teleportation. So, you know, it's interesting. This almost hints more at almost like Star Trek teleportation in some respects, though the first one didn't feel that way.
Or the what's the Philadelphia experiment? So instead of using electromagnetic rays to transport a ship, they just had a bunch of mediums sitting around and transporting it.
Right, and so it's like, what is the difference between psychokinesis and telekinesis? So I'm going to look up psychokinesis real quick because I'm curious. I've heard it before, but I'm not exactly...
Just for a little, if somebody offers you a bowl full of candy that is mostly just nuts, ask them if they used to be peanut M&Ms. So just, you know, just as a word of wise.
So... That's funny. So essentially, without having to read this whole thing, because we could use this later on, down at the bottom it says, do not confuse psychokinesis with telekinesis. Telekinesis is where, in the etheric world intelligences are the ones that perform the phenomena, whereas psychokinesis is
you're doing it. Gotcha.
So human versus spirits, essentially. That's why the medium is so important.
Right, yeah.
Because the medium is there for... being a medium between the threes.
Kind of like how water can be a medium, right?
Sure. I'm also thinking about, like, layered shots.
Yeah, well, when you think about electricity, for electricity to flow, it needs a medium.
Right. Right. Oh, so, okay, yeah.
Right,
yeah,
that
yeah.
can, like, yeah. in the scientific
So they need the Fox sisters.
Yeah.
but yeah, very, very interesting. Here's two ways to teleport yourself. You know, and we know that there are far more than that in terms of astral projection and different things, but this seems to be moving a physical object or yourself.
So since you mentioned astral projection there, let's say you were to astral project and then someone teleported your body to somewhere else. Your ribbon would still take you back to your body, right?
I don't know. If they're just being teleported in terms of moved, right?
Yeah.
Yes, but it's like, if it's like, you know, where you're Barkley over there in the teleporter, you know, does your body disintegrate and reassemble? At that point, does the cord...
Get cut?
Or does your astral body also disintegrate, and then your astral body is in a different spot as well, based off of the length that it was?
Man, that's some deep conversational thought.
I wish Gene Roddenberry was still alive. Yeah. I'd ask him. He'd be like, what?
Yeah.
I mean, if he did an AMA on Reddit, that's the question I have. All right, Gene. All right, you're astral projecting in the 24th century.
Yeah. Yeah. That's good stuff right there.
That is. But yeah, so very, very interesting. That was our psychic words of the week. We had two of them that week, but those were excellent. Absolutely excellent.
Fantastic.
So let's go ahead and jump right into spooky news for this week. I got a good one. All right, now I know I always say I got a good one, but it's just because I love finding this stuff. So this one kind of fits into some of the theories that not just us, but a lot of people have had lately that we're about to kind of fall into another UFO flap again.
Yep.
And so this one says here, this is from Patch.com, says UFO sightings soar once again in Connecticut. Says numerous UFO sightings have already been reported in Connecticut in 2020. Here's where they have been reported. So it's kind of like a list, but it's just Connecticut, you know. And I mean, we're just 6 months into the year.
Yeah.
And they're already saying like holy free holies. It says, as of Memorial Day weekend, there have been 22 UFO sightings in Connecticut for 2020 already, and a surge of reports have occurred since the coronavirus pandemic began.
People are at home.
Yeah. And this is according to a database compiled by the National UFO Reporting Center. So that's one I have not heard. New Fork. In 2019, 106 UFO sites were reported across the state of Connecticut. The New Fork has existed since 1974 and investigates reported sightings around the world. There have been more than 90,000 reports made globally. These are all towns in Connecticut with at least one reported sighting in 2020. Danielson, East Haddam, East Hartford lists a number of different towns, including Greenwich and some of the bigger ones. It says that Wallingford has already had four sightings in 2020. So this is Wallingford, Connecticut. They have four sightings.
What's the population of Wallington?
I'm not sure. You can look that up.
Yeah, I'll look that up.
So this says, I was going out to take the garbage out, and I saw the ball of light flying towards me. I ran back inside, and I thought, I'm going to be abducted, a North Stonington resident reported. In Weston, Connecticut, a man said 60 white lights were over Weston. And I work in Weston, and I've seen 60 lights following each other in formation. And I'm working here again today, and I saw a bright light fly over Weston again at the same time, but it was just one light this time. This must be an area for them to fly over.
So there are 6,000 people. As of the 2010 census, there were 6,000 people in Willington,
yeah,
Connecticut.
Weston. Oh, you're looking at the first one.
Yeah.
Wallingford. So you're looking at the wrong.
Oh.
So we've got Wallingford and Weston. So look up Weston.
Like, did you stay at a Weston last
night? Yeah, W-E-S-T-O-N. Curious now.
10,000.
So still. Weston. And then look up Wallingford, too, because they've already had four.
Wallingford.
Yeah, exactly what it sounds like.
45,000.
So one per every 10,000 people?
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Anyways, another one says, driving statistics, my friend. Another person says, driving on West Road, we saw a stationary craft in the sky above me with at least three lights too close to me to be a plane, and it was not moving. It seemed like a sparkly thing was coming down slowly from it, like a slow-moving pin of light towards my car. And I stopped the car and said to myself, what is that? I got so scared, and I just wanted to keep moving, and so I did. And this was, don't get confused here, an Ellington resident.
Oh, Ellington.
No W there.
Yeah.
Another one here says, square or diamond-shaped object flying, then hovering at a low altitude. My husband and I were driving south from Washington towards Roxbury on Bell Hill Road. I noticed an orange light in the sky that seemed to be fairly low and moving at a slow speed. As we got closer, driving at approximately 30 miles per hour, I stuck my head out of the window just to see what was going on and saw it going overhead. As we went over it, I noticed the object was square or diamond shaped with a white light at the front, a red light at each corner, two sides, and the rear. As we stopped at an intersection to take a look, we didn't notice any sound, though it appeared to be flying lower than usual aircraft. We continued driving down the road for about a mile when we pulled over to try to see the object again. We spotted the same flashing orange light that I noticed on our initial approach in the distance. We watched it for about 5 minutes, and though it was far away, the object did not appear to move. I was trying to judge its movement based on its proximity to large trees that were in the foreground. It stayed in the same place until we got into the car and left. And boy, that sounds so much like Betty and Barney Hill's story.
Yeah.
Like, dude, you all got lucky. Essentially.
Yeah, I mean, it's like our experience last weekend or whatever with... was it last weekend?
Time is lost on me, my friend.
Weekend, whenever it was.
Freaking weekend.
I think it might have been the weekend before, because I remember talking about it as part of our creepy catch-up. But anyways, when we saw those things, it's like a mixed feeling. You know, I want to see more, I don't know that I'm yet ready to meet anything that might be in those craft.
Right.
To your point, you know, you got lucky with the whole, you know, abduction stuff. So, I mean, it's just, I don't mind seeing it all. Let's say it this way. When you go to the new car show, you know, you want to walk up and you want to see the cars. You want to kind of sit in the cars, but you don't want to talk to the salespeople, right?
Right.
Same thing. I want to see the craft. I want to go inside the craft. I just don't want to talk to anybody that has to tell me about the craft.
I don't want nothing to do with you, boy.
I mean, you can just stand off to the side in your shiny spacesuits and watch me. You can ask for my phone number and a mailing address and if I want to go to for a test drive. Just don't try to take me anywhere.
Right, exactly. So I do have another one. I wanted to get one more in because this one is ridiculous. This one comes from UFOholic.com, so be ready.
Okay.
The headline, where's my headline at? My headline's already gone. Basically, a 7-foot long skeleton of a hellhound was found in England, I believe. So here's that story. It says, known by the name of Black Shuck, a name believed to derive from an old English word for black demon, this 7-foot-tall dog appeared as a bringer of death in many tales from 500 years ago to now. In the 16th century, its inhabitants of the British Isles were horrified by the brutal deaths committed by this giant hellhound with bright red burning eyes. Now, it took about 500 years for archaeologists to uncover its earthly remains under the ruins of Leiston Abbey in Suffolk. This is in England. In a nameless grave 30 inches deep, while several pottery fragments were covering its body. The massive dog skeleton was analyzed by a veterinarian who approximated its weight at about 200 pounds where it lived, while measuring not less than 7 feet on its hind legs. Could these skeletal remains have belonged to the feared Black Shuck? And if so, why would it rest under holy ground after all the atrocities it had committed? Could this find reveal some kind of ritualistic form of burial used upon the feared dog? It goes on a little bit just talking about Black Shuck, but it goes on later to say the black dog, or devil in such a likeness, was running all along down the body of the church with great swiftness and incredible haste. Among the people, in a visible form and shape, passed between two persons as they were kneeling upon their knees and occupied in prayer, as it seemed, wrung the necks of both of them at one instant, clean backwards, in so much that even a moment where they kneeled, they strangely died. This is a report from the church. But according to the latest radiocarbon dating tests, the strange remains seem to correspond to the time when Black Shuck was indeed terrorizing Eastern Anglia and Suffolk region. If it was indeed the feared hellish beast, or someone's faithful and extremely big hunting dog, we can only assume, the legend still remains, with people remembering it through rock songs or naming local clubs or antique shops after the black dog. One other person, of course, suggests that it seemed to be a vet, said that it may be the skeletal remains of a Great Dane, is what they think, though the shape is different. But if this was in the 1500s, who knows what a Great Dane was like back then.
So I looked up here, the average height of a Great Dane is around 30 to 34 inches, which is not 7 feet.
Well, that's the height, not the length. So it would need to be the length.
Well, no, your article said at the hind legs.
Yeah, if it were standing up.
Ah, I see.
Right.
What you're
so, because yeah, so it would be the technically it would be
as if it were to walk upright.
Correct.
Is what you're saying.
Correct.
Okay. Yeah. Then you I can see it being from
yeah,
there.
Yeah. You know. I mean, my ex stepmother Terry, she raises and breeds Great Danes, and so I've always been around them. They are indeed tall mofos. They and my cousins Stephanie and Bonnie and them, they also have Great Danes, and so. They are the sweetest dogs, but dear God, they think they're chihuahuas and love to lay on your lap.
I mean, it could have been like a Great Dane mixed with like a Bull Mastiff or something.
Or something crazy, so, yeah. Who knows? Some sort of black dog, right?
Yeah.
You know, but it was enough to scare people. Or, I mean, you know, and you can't trust the church at that time. They were using scare tactics as a way to get people in church.
Yeah,
so.
For all we know, it was a guy in a suit. I mean, you know.
So, but that's my spooky news for this week. I've got, you know, some possible skeletal remains of a hellhound, which in my opinion, I don't think a demon dog would die, but whatever. And then, of course, some UFO sightings, which leads us into the next segment, which is our UFO sighting for the week.
Yeah, so this one comes to us from LaGrange, actually Buckner, Kentucky, I apologize, which is, as the UFO flies, not too far from here.
Just a few miles. Yeah, that's so, pretty close. And
makes me wonder if I would have gone out that night to look at the sky, which I wanted to and I didn't, if I would have seen it too. But anyways.
At 11:15 p.m. on 6/6/2020, I am an amateur astronomer and computer engineer. I'm accustomed to understanding what I see in the world around me. On Saturday night at 11:15 p.m., my wife and I both saw an orange orb flying across the sky above our house. We watched it for 60 seconds until it disappeared over the horizon. It appeared to be around 5 to 10,000 feet in altitude and moving about the same speed a commercial airliner would be at that height. It did not blink or make a noise. It moved in a straight line from north to south. Google says the most common explanation is a Chinese lantern. It wasn't that. I held an ATF display fireworks license for 3 years and set off many of those and know what they look like. As for size, it was big, between 1/4 and 1/2 the size of a full moon.
Ooh, that's bigger than what we saw. But it's similar besides the color.
Yeah.
It's very similar to what we saw.
Well, and I mean, yeah, so talking earlier about the whole spike in UFO sightings, I mean, it's just, you know, at the time when you were reading that article, so unfortunately we've talked about it before that, there's so many, because of the whole Starlink stuff, there's so many of those, like, you know, the guy said that he saw, you know, a line of UFOs go across the sky. So part of me wants to say that the skeptic in me says that's probably Starlink. But I think the ones where you see, like, one thing flying, that's hard to dispute as Starlink.
And it's low and it's big.
Right. So, like, in our encounter that we had about a month or a month and a half ago in the park where we saw the line, even though I'm pretty sure that was not Starlink based on the positioning, it could still be disputed as Starlink.
Right, right. Even I'd still question myself on that.
So, it's almost like, you know, we've talked about this before. If the UFOs are traveling in a similar pattern, to confuse people and make them think it's Starlink. And so it makes you wonder if now so many individual sightings are coming forth because everybody's saying it's Starlink. And so they, you know, the people that are in or whatever in the UFOs are saying, "Hey, we got to make some regular appearances too because people are saying everything is Starlink."
The MIB.
Yeah.
Possibly. But yeah, no, I completely agree with you on that. And it, you know, and that's what makes it honestly. And that's what makes some of the other things we've seen that much more remarkable.
Right.
Because now I'm like, well, that definitely wasn't Starlink.
Yeah.
You know, like, especially that big bright white one.
Yeah. I mean, the last two that we've seen, I mean, they weren't even at like orbit level when they were like in the sky.
Yeah.
I mean, so yeah, it was, so anyway, so it's an amazing story. Really, I think it gives, even though it wasn't on the same night as when we were out in the backyard, it still gives credence that something else is happening in the area.
Yeah.
That here we, you know, here we saw something and then a week later someone in the same area saw something again.
What if it was meant for us? We just never went out there.
Yeah. I mean, I think about that all the time. I really do think about all the times that I want to go out in the backyard and look up at the night sky and choose not to. If I should,
right.
You know.
You know, and I have been lied to by Chinese lanterns before. I'd never seen them until probably like 10 years ago. And I was out at my dad's. I was sitting on the back porch, and like hundreds of them came by, and they were pretty high in the sky. And I'm like, oh my God, we are getting invaded.
Have like a flicker, right?
Well, these were up so high, I couldn't tell.
Couldn't see the flicker.
You know, and I'd never seen anything orange in the sky before that before. And then some lower ones came by, and I was able to see it, and I was like, oh, well, that's no fun. It was still cool, and I've kind of become obsessed with them since then, but yeah. I was like, we're dead.
Yeah, so this is so interesting, that this is so recent to when we were out there and also in the same area. So maybe the next time that I have this kind of urge to walk outside and look up at the sky, maybe I should just take a few minutes and walk out and do that.
Can't hurt.
You're right.
Can't hurt. All right, well, let's get into our last segment before we get into the topic, and let's get into this week's creepy catch-up.
Creepy catch-up. Creepy catch-up.
Creepy catch-up.
Creepy catch-up. Y'all, it's creepy.
Y'all, it is creepy.
Yeah.
It is creepy. So I'm going to tell you mine first, because I didn't have, like, any paranormal experience this week. It was pretty, excuse the pun, but it was pretty dead. But I did have a creepy experience by something that has creeped me out before, and that would be that stupid Data cardboard cutout of my mother-in-law's again. So Kenobi got spooked by it again, right? Mm-hmm. I had gone into the room that it's in, and I had moved it so it was facing the hallway. And, I mean, Kenobi's walking down the hallway, and all of a sudden he yelps. And I'm like, oh, God, what is that, right? And his hair's standing up, and he's barking, which I've told you before, he doesn't bark. And it was Data again. And I was like, ha, ha, ha. And so we kind of put it close to the door because we thought it was hilarious that we were trying to get Kenobi.
Yeah.
So that night I go to, I stay up real late. And so I just got done watching. I don't even know. Yeah, I don't know if I was watching a documentary or a horror movie. Doesn't matter. But I turned off all the lights, and I'm walking, and I usually just have my phone flash, not the flashlight even, just the screen, because I don't want to wake up Sarah or anything. And I'm walking by, man, and it just illuminates the silhouette. And I mean, from top to bottom, I was like, like, and I screamed, and Sarah's like, are you okay? Like, oh, and it was freaking Data, and it got me again, dude. It freaking got me. So, yeah, it scared me big time, and I've been foiled again by Data, and Sarah's mom thought it was the funniest thing.
So I was thinking about it, and I might give it away if Sarah's mom listens to the show, so you might have to, like, wait a little bit and try it again. But get some fishing twine and, like, just kind of, like, tape it to Data's head, and then put it somewhere, like, where if you walk on it, it'll pull Data at you. You know what I'm saying? Like,
I'm automatically thinking about Home Alone 2, I think, or maybe one where he's got the cardboard cutout that's like dancing, and then the one that's in the shower and like stuff like that.
That's the first one, yeah. But if you could figure out some way to rig it to where like it would fall towards you, I'm pretty sure that would.
Yeah, and what would happen is it would happen to me, and I would scream. Because that's my luck. But yeah, other than that, I didn't have anything creepy this week happen to me. Though I did spend a lot of time looking at the stars. I was looking at the moon. I mean, the moon was absolutely gorgeous this week. Sarah and I met up with some friends on Saturday, and it was that beautiful full strawberry moon. Mm-hmm. And we saw it when it was just orange and just massive, and it was just spectacular, man. Absolutely spectacular.
So very cool. I also have not had that much. Except for this. So like three nights ago, something like that. I had a dream, and I've had a lot of dreams lately with my dog Eli that passed.
Yeah, very interesting.
The other night I had a dream, and in my dream he was like, alive, and he was living here at the house, and we were playing, and he had gotten out and was running around the house, and he didn't have his collar on, so I was worried he was like gonna get in the street or something. And so I was chasing him around the house, and then like he disappeared, like I couldn't find him. And so I looked everywhere, and I couldn't find him anywhere. And I finally found him, And he was like laying behind some shrubs in my front, like the front of my house, against the house, against the wall, below our window to our office. And I've got some like tall lily flowers that are standing there. And so he had trampled over a couple of them and everything. And so like I reached back there and I got a hold of him. You know, we went inside and I put his collar on him. So now fast forward to a couple of days later, I was outside and I was taking some pictures with like flowers and things around the house and just doing some stuff. And back in that area, some of the flowers were actually laid over. And I got down to look and see what was going on. They were laid over at the ground. And some of the other like fauna around the area was also pressed down onto the ground.
Wow.
As if something was laying there. So,
that's spooky cool.
I don't know. So, like, you know, I talked to my wife about it, and she's like, well, maybe it's a cat, or maybe it's something else, and it's...
Sure, you can say maybe it's anything. That's what skeptics do.
Right.
But it's like, the thing is what if it was Eli?
Yeah.
Right? What if it was? Why can't we say that? Why can't we say, well, it might have been Eli. Might have been his spirit. Because he does seem to be a powerful spirit for you, you know, and is showing up a lot in dreams and things like that. And there's probably a reason for it.
Yeah.
You know, whether it's just him trying to say hi or to let you know something or to just not forget him. Right. I don't know.
Well, something that I was thinking about a little while ago when I was talking with you and Santosh about it is you guys were talking about having a spirit guide. And I wondered if Eli is my spirit guide.
It's possible, and he may have been your spirit guide while he was alive too, or was your spirit guide, you know, when you were born and then took on the body of Eli when Eli was born.
Right.
You know, who knows?
Yeah.
None of us really know, but yeah, it's very, very possible, because I mean, I'm definitely one of those that believe that in our next life, we could be animals. So I completely believe that animals have the souls of humans, you know, and that's my own personal opinion. But yeah, why not? Why not?
So yeah, that's the extent of my creepy ketchup. It's not really creepy. It's more comforting really than anything. It's comforting ketchup. So.
And I had scary ketchup. Yeah. So. But yeah, all right. Well, let's get moving into our topic. And of course, before we head to our topic, let us take a quick ad break.
Hey, Blanket Huggers, Stefan here from Fearscape Paranormal Podcast, and do we have a scary good deal for you right now. If you head over to fearscapepodcast.com/Gamefly, you can get a 30-day free trial Gamefly subscription on us. Now, if you're not familiar with Gamefly, it's a game and movie rental service where you can play the hottest video games for systems like the Nintendo Switch, Xbox One, or even the PS4. You can get up to 2 games or movies out at a time, and you can do that an unlimited amount of times a month. Josh and I love to play our game systems, and I am really enjoying the Final Fantasy VII Remake right now. And if you're like me, games are too expensive to buy and beat in the same weekend. Well, with Gamefly, you can get it and keep a game as long as you need. Then you just send it back and get the next game on your list. So head on over to fearscapepodcast.com/Gamefly today and give it a try.
All right, thank you guys for sticking around. We are going to be talking about John Teeter. I'm just going to let you take over from here, man.
Yeah.
John Teeter also rhymes with Peter.
I don't know if it's Teeter or Titor.
Titor or Titer.
I don't think it's Titer.
No?
I don't think so.
I'll make up my own stuff. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
That's why I don't do research.
So this guy popped on the scene November 2nd, 2000. And there's a time travel institute message board. It's still out there. You can actually go and read all of these responses from John. You know, when I was going through and documenting things, at some point I had well over 150 pages of responses and
so
communications.
So this is pre-Reddit, right?
This is 2000. So
yeah,
it's
so like 2000, 2001.
Yep.
And so he's just on different boards. I mean, just any paranormal board he could find, essentially, right? Or time
travel
board.
He's specifically on this board.
Oh, okay.
And only this board. And it has to do with the time travel. So it's called, the website is bbs.timetravel.institute. And it's really for people who get on there and talk about their theories and ideas around time travel. So this guy, I think his handle name was Paul, and he made this
creative.
Yeah.
It's creative.
He made this big, long topic discussion around, you know, how paradoxes work and you know, if you were to go back in time and, you know, see your grandmother, for example, don't kill her because you'll never be born and all this kind of stuff.
Oh, man. So they're busting through the rules. Yeah. It makes you wonder if movies got, you know, any ideas based off these boards.
So so anyway, he gave this big, long explanation. So, you know, a few people reply. So then this John Tudor guy comes in and he replies and he says, wow, Paul is right on the money. I was just about to give up hope on anyone knowing who Tipler or Kerr was in this world line. By the way, number two is the correct answer in the basics of time travel. They start at CERN in about a year and end in 2034 with the first time machine being built by GE. Yeah, so then he says, you know, too bad we can't post pictures or I'd show it to you.
So this is back 2000. I wonder if the board was different. You know, looking at the board now, I see pictures and stuff. So could have been just a different time. Or
I think based on what I saw in the responses, it was a restriction because he was a new member, and so he couldn't post pictures. But
right, so he had to earn a lot of messages. Or even Reddit or one of them, you got to earn your way up to do better things.
So what's funny is this person on there named Pamela. She ends up reaching out to him and says, hey, I'll post them for you. Send them to me. So he sends them to her. She posts them. Now, the links that are provided are no longer valid because I did click on them and I was like, man, it's not working.
That sucks.
So, but you can still find the pictures that he, that were shared. You just got to look. So, basically, and I've pulled what I think are probably some of the more interesting responses that he gave to some of the questions that were asked out of the 150 plus pages that I found.
So real quick, so this dude just shows up out of nowhere with knowledge.
Yep.
Interesting.
And what's really I think more interesting than anything is that in all of the back and forth conversation that's had on this message board, he has really plausible answers for everybody's questions.
Well, I would assume so, or why would we be talking about him?
Right, exactly. Right. So he works with Pamela. They apparently email back and forth quite a bit. And then she comes in and she would drop like these huge, you know, email responses where she would ask a series of questions. He'd reply back with answers and then she'd drop them on the board. At one point in time, I think that, he stopped emailing her. And so she was like posting in the message board, you know, did I do something wrong and all this kind of stuff. And then all of a sudden he would start messaging again. So, so I'm just going to kind of read through some of the things here that he says and, we'll talk about a couple of these things because they're just really interesting what he talks about here. So, so the first question that Pamela asks is, can you tell me what it feels like to time travel? When you were in the process of doing it, what does it feel like? And what do you see and hear? You had made mention that you had to get used to the fields. Do you see a bright flash of light? So then, John, who goes underneath the name Time Traveler _0, on the board, it says, interesting first question. The unit has a ramp up after the destination coordinates are fed into the computers. An audible alarm and a small light start a short countdown, at which point you should be secured in the seat. The gravity field generated by the unit overtakes you very quickly. You feel a tug toward the unit, similar to rising quickly in an elevator. And it continues to rise based on the power setting the unit is working under. At 100% power, the constant pull of gravity can be as high as 2 G's or more, depending on how close you are to the unit. There are no serious side effects, but I try to avoid eating right before a flight.
So I will tell you this. First of all, I'm a little freaked out because, one, I've had a few time travel dreams before, and that sensation that he talked about is exactly what I felt. But I will also tell you, it's also a similar sensation to astral as well.
Yeah.
The other thing is does he say who he is or where he got his unit from? Or
oh yeah.
So
he goes into it. So, you know, it's up to you. I can give you a little more information about him now, or we can get to it in the conversation.
Because I want to know who and where he's from and who he's saying he is. But I mean, it's up to you to decide where.
All right. So I'll give you a little bit of information so you can apply that context to what we're going to talk about here. So he's from the year 2034.
Okay, so he's from the future. He's not a modern cat.
Correct. He's from the year 2034. A lot of the stuff that they talk about, how they describe their community, it's stuff that we've talked about before. But basically, there was a civil war that led to a world war.
God, that's scary, because what's happening right now in America?
After the World War, the United States broke up into five territories. The states are still around. They're just more in those five territories.
Right.
So at one point in time, he talks about they're thinking about changing the flag from 50 stars to 5 stars. All the states have power. So there's really no...
So it's still the United States.
Right.
But it's like now there are these bigger principalities,
right,
that exist that have, so instead of governors, you would have like a regional governor, right, so to speak. It's sounding very much like the Galactic Republic.
So here, this next little piece of information I'm going to give you should sound familiar, because it's a dream that I had and I told you about. So they all live in small communities. So within each state, there's a community of people. All of the stores are local for the community. Things are shipped in for the community. All the vegetables, livestock, everything is raised for the community. They still have technology. The internet's still around, all that kind of stuff.
It sounds like a lot of monopolies have been broken up.
Yeah, but there's like, it's very much community centric. So that's just a little bit of information about
where... It's crazy to think, because now we're 14 years away from when he says he is living at that moment.
Well, and a lot of the dates that he gives have come and gone, and things didn't happen. Mm. And he has a reason for that.
Sure. I mean, paradoxes, you know, or different things like that. I mean, just him simply saying anything could cause a change in the timeline.
Well, also, and I don't remember how much of this I included in, so I'll go ahead and say it now, but he describes time travel as... So, I'm trying to think how to say this, because he doesn't do a good job of explaining it, but I understand what he's saying, which is scary. Think of it like a loosely bundled group of cables. Okay. So, every cable in the bundle is a different world line. So, almost like a multiverse type.
Yeah, I think we talked about that in the Unhinged time travel episode. It also reminds me of when Bill and Ted are going down, you see all those different lines, right?
So, each one of those is a world line. When they time travel, they don't go back in time on their world line. They go back in time to a world line that is really close to the timeline of their world line, so that... it's likely to still have a lot of the same stuff that they need, because they only travel back in time to get things that they need for the future.
Now, that's something that I've heard before, too, was not only that, like, being able to go back on another time world line, so therefore it also does not mess up the future, right? But also I've heard this idea that... time travel is not traveling as much as it is phasing into another dimension that is back in 1673.
Yeah.
Parallel with ours right now, yet they're in 1673, we're in 2020, right? I've heard that as well.
So, you know, he talks about how the machine that does all this calculation...
Skynet.
Yeah, it has to look at... Actually, it's built by GE, so it has to look
right
at...
Right here in Louisville, man.
So he uses a C204, which he talks about why it's a C204, and I'll get into that in a little bit. But what it does is it calculates a divergence. So it the greatest divergence it's willing to accept is 2%. So a 2% divergence from whatever world line he is coming from. So that's why I think in his world line, there was a civil war that erupted in 2004. In our world line, we didn't have that in 2004. Right. And the reason could be because that divergence was enough that it delayed or changed what was supposed to happen. Because when you think about, you know, two lines that are running at 2% convergence, the farther you get into that line, the more that divergence grows, right? Mm-hmm. So you may start at a certain point at 2%, but by the time you reach his year, 2034, it may be as great as 50 or 60% divergence.
Right. Yeah, similar kind of idea in the show Fringe,
yeah.
Where that other world they went to had something didn't happen. Was it World War II or something like that? Didn't happen, and you know, so they were still able to have airships and all sorts of different things like that.
I don't remember what it was that didn't happen, but yeah, it was something,
something along that lines.
So, yeah. You know, getting back to this, to the initial conversation here between Pamela and
About what does time travel feel like and all that?
Yeah. So he says that the C-204 unit, which is again, that's the unit that he uses, is accurate from 50 to 60 years a jump and travels at about 10 years an hour at 100% power.
Einstein is like, what?
So in order for him to travel, you know, 60 years, it's a 6-hour trip.
That's interesting. That's very, in a lot of ways, reminds me of H.G. Wells' time machine, where he could move faster in time or slower in time, whereas he's not. He's like, hey, it maxes out here.
Right.
But it's still using years as a time gauge, a speed gauge is very interesting.
And he also talks about how when he's traveling, his vehicle, so he actually traveled back in time in a 1967 Ford Mustang. And so somebody questioned him on it. So, you know, you got a 67
Ford.
So
this is like Back to the Future here?
Well, somebody questions him. So you got a 67 Ford Mustang in 2034. And he says, well, we were actually lucky to find it. When we travel back to a certain time period, we have to make sure we use vehicles that would have been found.
Oh, well, yeah. That
in that
sense,
time period.
Yeah.
So he's like, so initially he traveled back to 1975. That was his initial trip. Then he came forward to 2000. So when he went to 1975, he sold the 67 Ford Mustang in 70 before he went again to 2000, and he traveled in 2000. He's using a 1987 like Chevy pickup truck or something. And then so he's talking about his return trip is they'll have to go and sell that truck, buy another vehicle that you would find in 1975 because he has to go back to 1975 in order to go forward on his world line to 2034.
My brain hurts, Josh.
and again, it gets back to the divergence, right? Mm-hmm. In 1975 is when the divergence is at the least, when those two world lines are so close together. So he has to go back to 1975 to ensure that he ends up back in his world line.
Right, and then even then you said something earlier that caught my ear was it could only move like 10 years at a time or something like that.
Well, it's valid within 50 to 60 years.
That's what it was, 50 to 60 years. So he can go back 50, 60 years, and then he would have to start again, if he wanted to go back further.
Well, only that unit can go back 50 or 60 years.
Yeah.
They have a different unit that can go back further.
Oh. But, okay, let's say the 50, 60-year unit, right? He goes back 50 years, but he wants to go back 100 years. So he could then, once he goes back 50 years, restart it again and go back another 50?
Only if the divergence isn't that much.
Oh, okay. So, I mean, he's basically stuck within a 50-year window.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, if he wanted to go back 100 years, let's say he had a unit that could do that, he would have to figure out, or the machine would have to calculate a world line that is within a 2% divergence that is 100 years back in time.
Oh, yeah. I forgot that the divergences have to be calculated
right in.
It's too much math, man.
So, if this isn't making your brain hurt, you should read the entire. So one of the other things that Pamela asks him is, "What are your memories of 2036?" I think I said 2034 before, but 2036. He says, I remember 2036 very clearly. It is difficult to describe 2036 in detail without spending a great deal of time explaining why things are so different.
Right. And so this is already a difficult question because he's in essentially a different timeline.
Right. So. And it's, you know, again, and he tries many times during the conversation, he tries to explain to people that just because it happened in my world line won't mean it'll happen in yours because of the divergence. So it's what's really scary, and this is scary for me reading through all this, is that A, it makes sense. Mm-hmm. B, it seems plausible. And C, I understand it and I kind of believe it a little bit. Mm-hmm. So,
well, and it feeds into some of the other things that we've seen before. We haven't talked about it yet, but the passenger from the country of Torion or whatever it was, it's like, and then this idea that there are these occasional phases and shifts of dimensions where they cross over. You know, it's like, here's this guy from Torion or whatever it's from. And what if he, you know, was on a separate world line, right? And it shifted into our world line for, you know, a day.
Right.
And for a moment, he's the one that shifted, right?
Right.
It's like, oh, man, it kind of fits some of those other theories.
So, you know, he goes on to say that in 2036, he lives in Central Florida with his family, and he's stationed at an army base in Tampa.
Florida man goes back in time.
A world war in 2015 killed nearly 3 billion people.
Jesus, that's almost half
the population,
Of the Earth. Now, so army, so he's a military guy. So is this device military, or is it something the public can use?
No, it's definitely, there's like a unit of people who were put together.
So Stargate, essentially.
Yes.
Okay, so what sucks about that is that even if, let's say, we were on the same timeline as him, even if we got to 2036, we wouldn't know because it could have been some secret,
right?
You know, freaking project.
Yeah, exactly. I guess that's true with a lot of things. I mean, we probably don't know half the stuff.
Yeah.
That, you know.
Y'all wait till we talk about the secret space program.
So he says that life is centered around the family and then the community. I cannot imagine living even a few hundred miles away from my parents. There is no large industrial complex creating masses of useless food and recreational items. Food and livestock is grown and sold locally. People spend much more time reading and talking together face to face. Now, he does say something here. Religion is taken seriously and everyone can multiply and divide in their heads. I don't know what that has to do with religion, but he did include it.
Well, I mean, we don't know his world line if math was part of their religion.
True.
Right? I mean, there are a lot of religions that do rely on math. But
and I don't think I included it here, but he talks a little bit about God in his world line. Mm-hmm. And so he says everybody works to get closer to God. But then later he talks about how God is not an entity. God is the world.
Okay, now you're getting into my beliefs, you know, is that we are God.
Yep.
You know, we are that. And that the Star Trek world where you just work to better yourself is that, essentially.
Yeah.
And that humanism and things like that, it kind of fits that. And it's interesting, you know, they talk about the food and things like that, because one thing I haven't really heard him talk about was work. It seems like military, of course, which will never go away, it seems like military and technology are kind of the only things out there. Everything else is just surviving and living and being a community, because we lost half the world and we realized, oh, crap, we have to be one.
Well, he does at some point in time say that as long as you use your hands, you'll always find a job. Hmm. Like if you can sit, like buckle down and do some work, you'll always have a job.
Well, I wonder if money is involved. You know,
he talks about it.
He does. Oh, see,
all of your questions he has answered.
This is some psychokinesis right here.
So, couple things here I'm not going to read through, but I want to highlight is he sent Pamela a few pages from the operator's manual for the machine. And those pictures of those of the scanned images from that manual are available online. I've seen quite a few of them. They look like an army instructional manual. I mean, it looks up.
It reminds me of Napoleon Dynamite when his brother gets that time machine.
I mean, It even shows like a unit, and it has like the call out lines that show like what all the little different pieces are and everything. So if this was a hoax, somebody went to a lot of effort to make it a hoax. So anyways, let's see. How is this world line different from your own? For starters, the fact that I'm here makes it different. I've also noticed the little things like news events that happened at different times, football games won by other teams, things like that. I would guess the temporal divergence between this world line and my original is about 1-2%. Of course, the longer I am here, the larger that divergence becomes from my own point of view.
If he's coming back from 75 and he's in 2000, that already puts the difference bigger.
Right.
So,
she asks him, are you able to control where you go or is it random? And he says, yes, it can be controlled. However, the distortion unit has operational limits. Imagine your path through time is through a cone. The farther away from the center of the cone, the more differences you will see in the world line. The C204, again, that's the unit he's using, begins to break away at about 60 years. This means the level of confidence drops rapidly after 60 years of travel.
Okay.
And the world line divergence increases. In other words, if I wanted to go back 2,000 years and meet Christ, there is a better than average chance I would end up in a world line where he was never born.
Because it's so far.
Yep.
Interesting.
The computer units and gravity sensors record your trip, and you are quite easily able to return to your point of origin. I am aware that research is being done on faster units with more accurate clocks.
I was about to say, yeah, we're just at 2036. What does it look like 100 years from then, you know?
I imagine that they will be able to go back farther with a higher degree of divergence confidence.
Interesting.
It says, are you able to go back to your old world line? Yes, he's already kind of answered that.
Yeah, so, you know, it's funny that the first question she had was vague, because immediately I was like, does she mean location or time? Yeah. You know, because that's always my question is does the Earth move? You know, do you end up in space?
He answers that question, too.
Yes. I love this guy. So,
I feel like after we do this episode, we're going to have to go back and do another time travel episode. Mm-hmm. So, she asks, do your people know where you are right now? Can you communicate with them? Do you have a biological implant?
Do you know where you are?
he says, no, they do not know where I am, and I cannot communicate with them. Interesting idea, though. From their point of view, I will return almost exactly at the moment I left.
Oh, I was going to ask that. So he comes back directly at the same time. So to them, it's like no time passed, so there would be no reason to communicate.
He says, from their point of view, I will have only aged more than expected. So it's like he can come back and be here, let's say, in this time world line for 5 years.
For 5 years, so he will have aged 5 years.
Aged 5 years, but from their perspective, he's only been gone for milliseconds.
Yeah, crazy. That's crazy. It is crazy to me that they can't communicate. I was watching that thing on History Channel I told you about, that time travel episode that I watched. One of the things they talked about was this theory that exists, that time travelers are already there, and they are able to communicate through time-space with one another. Hmm.
Well, I don't know if you remember, there was a show on, like, NBC or ABC. It was only on for one season. I thought it was an excellent show, but it didn't make the cut. And it was basically Earth was dying because of overpopulation. So they sent a bunch of people back to the Jurassic period.
Oh, Terra Nova or
yes,
whatever it was?
That's what it was.
Yes, I really liked that show, too. Oh, they were canceling the best show of all time.
Bring it back.
Alcatraz was around that time. That was a good show. Yeah, I ain't even going to talk about that.
So, but like, you know, I don't know if you remember or not, but in Terra Nova, they could communicate with the future. They had a predetermined place where they would put messages and the future would get them.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's a classic Bill and Ted move as well.
Yeah, well, and frequency.
Way, the way that the show that I saw talked about it was that there was this force field that was essentially around you that in all actuality kept you within your time, if that makes sense. Mm. It's like the time energy was 2020, but we're back in time. I'm in 1960, but because my time energy is still in 2020, we can still communicate with a walkie-talkie or so, or whatever. So that's
interesting.
Yeah. Way out there.
But I mean, when you think about it, with a world line, who would he talk to?
Yeah.
He'd be talking to that world line's future, not his own world.
I mean, it all depends. It all depends. I don't know.
I don't know
I'm
either.
I'm not John Titor.
So,
so it says that, let's see, after the flash of light is gone, are you then in another time? What does it look like as new time unfolds? Is it just there? Or does it slowly come into view? Or does it fade in and out?
Good question. Good question.
So he comes back and says, while the time machine is on, everything is black. When the machine is turned off, it is the reverse effect. It appears you are driving out from a bridge. To tell you the truth, I'm usually sleeping when the unit turns off, but yes, it does appear that the world fades in from black.
Well, yeah, I mean, 6 or 7 hour drive. So that tells me he doesn't have to control anything.
No, it's just, well, he's not driving.
Oh, it's just sitting there.
It's just sitting.
So that very much is H.G. Wells' idea as well, that it's sitting there and everything moves around.
Because he even talks about how there's a piece of the ground that gets caught in the time, he calls it a gravity bubble, but in the time bubble that he takes back with him to the future.
Interesting.
So it says, what happens if the device messes up? Do you end up in space? If it goes offline and shifts, does a hole open up somewhere? He says, good question. That almost never comes up. Which tells me that he's had these types of conversations before.
In other world
lines. In other world lines.
Because that's also was going to be my question, too, is like, why does he feel okay sharing this stuff, right? Is it his part of his mission or what?
Well, and he even talks about that, because a lot of people question him, you know, and I find it hard to believe you. And several times he says, I'm not here for you to believe me. Mm-hmm. I'm just trying to get you to think about things to change your outcome based on my world line's outcome and how close our two world lines are.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's like if you can stop a world war and killing 3 billion people and then seeing how messed up we are as a world right now, I'm like, oh, God.
So here's your question of why you wouldn't just end up in space.
Yeah.
Okay. So he says,
good question.
He says, the hard part of traveling through time is not the bending of gravity, but the plotting of your course and holding to the basic position in your environment. This is done through a system called the VGL, or the variable gravity lock. Basically, the unit takes a reading of the local gravity and samples it during the trip in pulses. If the gravity is too far off, the unit stops or reverses itself to the last sample period where the readings were correct. Mm. If there is some sort of failure, the unit shuts down and drops out wherever you may be.
So that's scary.
So what he basically is talking about there is that it's the assumption that I think scientists had, that the Earth's gravity has always been the same. Mm-hmm. There's been no fluctuation in the Earth's gravity. It hasn't gotten stronger or gotten weaker over time. So the fact that the Earth's gravity is constant, you can measure what the gravity is, and then the system is constantly checking to ensure that that gravity is the same. So it doesn't drop you into space where there is no gravity.
Right.
So it basically, if you want to think of it this way, it anchors you to that place on Earth, regardless of where Earth is in the orbit around the sun.
Hmm.
Now, the whole dropping you out wherever you are, that is a little creepy, but especially if it drops you out in a world line that is a great divergence from your own.
Yeah.
But, so, and then he says, and I think this is really interesting, he says, please keep in mind a couple of points as I answer your questions. First, I am not a physicist. Time travel is only a tool that allowed me to do my job. Most airline pilots, probably not aerospace engineers.
Right. Yeah, I was like, he's military. He's not an astrophysicist or anything like that, for sure.
Second, let me give you an example of the position we are in. Imagine you live in the year 1900, and a time traveler attempts to explain how a jet engine works. Even though the invention of the airplane is only a decade in the future, he would have to find some frame of reference to explain the basics of flight. Then, he would have to outline the mechanics of how the engine works. As amazing as it would sound, the jet would be invented about 30 years later.
Yeah, I mean, that's the magic of yesterday is the science of today.
Right.
You know, and I've always seen that. It's like if we went back in time and showed them our cell phone.
Oh, I mean, if we went back to when, you know, when we walked on the moon,
yeah,
and showed them ourselves, I mean, it just, you know, we'd probably be locked up in an insane asylum somewhere.
I always love whenever they go back in time to, like, the Stone Age or things like that, they always end up giving the caveman headphones. Always. It's like a prereq.
Right. So here's the how it all works. Pamela asks, can you explain to me in detail the basic physics?
Not a physicist.
And mathematics.
That's my religion.
Behind how the machine operates and exactly how it distorts gravity. He says, time travel is achieved by altering gravity. This concept is already proven by atomic clock experiments. The closer an observer is to a gravity source, high mass, the slower time passes for them. Traveling at high speeds mimics this effect, which the twin paradox of faster-than-light travel. However, this type of gravity manipulation is not sufficient to alter your world line. The basic math to alter world lines exists right now. Tipler first described a working time machine through his theory of massive rotating spheres. I apologize for the website, but it was the only one I could find quickly. He then gives a site that explains, and it happens to be talking about Area 51, this Tepler description. He says, certain types of black holes also exhibit the time travel abilities of Tipler cylinders. Kerr, was one of the first to describe the dual event horizons of a rotating black hole. As with Tipler cylinders, it was possible to travel on a time-like trip through a Kerr black hole and end up in a different world line without being squished by the gravity of the singularity. Mm. He then gives a bunch of other links, like physics papers of FSU and all kinds of other stuff. The mass and gravitational field of a micro-singularity can be manipulated by injecting electrons onto its surface. By rotating two electric micro-singularities at high speed, it is possible to create and modify a local gravity sinusoid that replicates the effects of a Kerr black hole. For those asking how come micro-singularity doesn't swallow the Earth or want to know details about the size, stability, mass, temperature, and resulting Hawking radiation from such a thing, those details I must keep to myself.
So he is still, in essence, keeping secrets.
Yeah.
Which tells you he was meant to release these secrets.
Yeah. This was enough to establish credibility so that you might heed his caution.
What if that is the whole purpose of that future military?
Well, he does talk about the reason he went back to 1975 is he needed a specific mainframe computer that could read a certain kind of code that they didn't have in 2036. Mm. So he said they exist primarily to go back and get things
right.
That they need that they no longer have.
That they no longer have. You know, because if you're looking at 3 billion people dying, those are nuclear.
Yeah.
You know, there's...
Well, he talks about the war a lot, and he says they used biological and chemical weapons, and then ultimately ended in nuclear holocaust. So, but yeah, I mean it's and I don't know how long we've been going here, but I mean, I'm on page 6 of 17, and I trimmed that down from 150. So,
I mean, we might need to do a part 2 on this, man. Like,
it is just, again, the level of detail that is provided, and the again, the plausibility of what it could be. Let's see.
So yeah, let's hit a little bit more, and then let's indeed do a follow-up. I would love to revisit this because I'm so massively interested in this right now.
So let me give you two things here. One about travel to the future.
Okay.
And then the next one about traveling into the past a little bit more. All right, so Pamela asks him, can you travel to the future as well as the past? My understanding of the machine is the trip is recorded so that you can get back to your original timeline. But what about a future beyond your timeline? Are you able to access it as well?
Not to be John Teeter here, but good question. I hadn't even thought about traveling forward.
So he says, yes, you can travel into the future and it takes less energy than going into the past.
Huh.
She talks about the pictures that she has for the device. She says, I don't see the computer in the device. Is it a handheld device on the side of the unit? He says the computer system is connected to the unit through an electrical bus. There are actually three computers linked together that take the same signals from the gravity sensors and clocks. They use a Borda era, I don't know what that means, must be something from the future, correcting protocol that checks the integrity of the data and trips the VGL system.
She didn't ask more about the future? Like the future?
Well, she says, what will the year 2036 be like?
I want to know past that, because now we know he can go to the future.
Well, it'd only be the future in his world line.
Oh, so they can't go to other world line futures.
No, just their own.
So many weird rules.
So I'll do this, and then we'll call this one, because honestly, this is stuff is so fascinating, I could keep going. But
yeah, I want to revisit this for sure.
So it just says that I will ask you about your environment. Then I want to know about the family life and also about your religion. What religion has survived? He says, yes, I believe in Jesus Christ and we pray to God in churches. There are some differences you may be interested in. Religion is a major part of people's life in 2036. Pain and change tend to bring people together and closer to God.
This is true.
However, religion is far more personal than it is now.
I mean, you look at World War II, and that's why the 50s were so like church-centric.
He says there are no huge centralized religions, and people talk openly about their beliefs. It might also interest you to know that the day of worship is Saturday, the day God meant to be the Sabbath.
Well, so he says Seventh Day Adventist.
And the Ten Commandments have been restored to the 10 that God gave us. So there was more than 10 in his timeline.
Wow.
And they were restored to the 10. And then, so it just talks about, you know, you can get jobs as long as you can work. I was going to skip to the part where he talked about God being themselves, but I can't find it. So anyways, yeah, so we'll have to come back and hit this again.
Yeah, I really, really want to, because I just saw you flipping and saw some stuff that I'm like, I had those questions. So we're going to wrap up, sadly. I know you guys want more, but so do we, but we don't want to be here for 3 hours. Yeah. We will revisit this, and holy moly, I want to talk about this more.
And like I said, I mean, I trimmed this, what he talked about, down to 17 pages from over 150.
Jesus.
We could probably spend like 4 or 5 episodes talking about it.
I had no idea when we put this dude on the list that it was going to be this. But yeah, very, very interesting. Wow. I want to jump right into our listener story real quick just to move things along. But John Teeter, look him up. You gave the website. I've already been perusing that message board. It's insane. Looking at a bunch of different stuff. I'm like, is there a website that has compiled everything, I wonder? If not, there needs to be.
So there are people who have pulled things out to talk about them. But and that's honestly what I was going to try to do when I first started this endeavor. And then I got to over 150 pages, and I was only like on third or fourth page of the message board. And so, yeah.
Well, moving on to our listener story, This is actually a second listener story from someone we've had on before from the Haunted History of Kentucky. This comes from a guy named Jerry R. Hiles Archambault. He is from Kentucky, and we actually had our good friend and voiceover actor Brad McQuarrie is actually the one that is portraying Jerry this time. I think I did it the first time. But this is the second story from Jerry Archambault, and this is from Brad McQuarrie. By the way, Brad also hosts now with his wife a kind of like a trying different things type YouTube channel called We What. It's pretty awesome. YouTube.com/WeWhat!!! I think. So make sure to check that out. It's a fantastic, funny show. But here he is doing Jerry's story.
Hi, it's Jerry A. from Kentucky again. Sorry, this is a really long one, but it's definitely time for me to share and get this off my chest. Since I was but a little one, I have been gifted with the ability to feel and see at times the spiritual realm. If you have read or listened to any of my other experiences, you know more than most of my closest friends and family. It's very common because of the stigma for people to not talk about their experiences, afraid of being shamed or called a liar. Yes, some of my experiences have been so bizarre that even I had to shut my mind down and tuck them away in the far backside of my mind. Several have caused near mental breakdowns, depression even to the point of suicidal thoughts. Sometimes I feel like a cold breeze blowing, and with that I know I'm not alone. I will always, out loud, announce my position and a child of God, and that I will not allow any negative contact. Most of the time, it's not anything vicious. In fact, the majority of the time, it's just a shadow or a noise that can't be explained, like a knock when no one else is there. I moved into this apartment a little over 3 years ago that is owned by some family of mine. Everyone around knew the place was haunted. It was so bad that some people refused to even come in, and a few swore they would never sleep here. One example, a cousin of mine said she had a horrifying experience in the bedroom and refuses to sleep there anymore. This cousin of mine, let's call her Angel. Well, Angel said she had stayed in this certain bedroom for a couple months with a few mild experiences throughout. Movements with the bed while she was trying to sleep, and her boyfriend being shoved a couple times, and once even being completely pushed off the bed. Angel and her boyfriend started having arguments all the time, and before moving into the apartment, they never really argued. It got so bad that her boyfriend decided to go stay with a family member for a couple weeks. One night, Angel was in the shower after a long day at work. All of a sudden, the lights flickered a few times, quickly, to the point that she just kind of got confused, wondering if it was just her imagination. She hurried out of the shower and rushed to bed. She was so scared. She was overwhelmed by anxiety, even though she'd never really seen or heard anything. Finally, she fell asleep for about an hour, and then out of nowhere, she wakes up. Not able to move. Not able to scream or make any sound. Then, there it was. This huge, dark shadow. So dark she could see the outlines so vividly. Even though all the lights were out, it was standing at the foot of her bed. It was about 7.5 feet tall. She said the only way she'd explain it was that it was just this huge thing in size, muscular, with the head of a bird, and sticking out of its head were like two feathers or horns. It leaned over her motionless body and put its beak to her head and squawked so loudly she thought her head was going to explode. She felt dirty, violated. She said that nothing physically happened. It was more like everything happened telepathically. Well, after what seemed like an eternity, I'm guessing 10 minutes, the thing stood upright and walked through the wall. That morning, she promptly moved out, and even though she does come to visit me there, she refuses to go back in that room, or even the bathroom. This happened to her 6 years ago, and she just told me this a couple weeks ago. Also, she asked to change her name and never tell anyone who she is, but gave me permission to share. Anyway, back to me. I moved in here over 3 years ago. When I first moved in, the place was very active. Shadows, things moving, tables, chairs, items on to almost everything, and noises. One night I came home from work, and a picture that had been hanging on the wall was in the middle of the room, lying on the floor, face down, but not broken. This picture box was for a pet that had passed away, containing a picture card and a collar that my dog had worn. On the card is a scripture and a prayer ending with, "In Jesus' name." This is when I decided to find out if this thing had evil intentions. Remember, I hadn't heard Angel's story yet. I immediately started praying and blessing everyone and everything. I felt a very cold breeze, and nothing was on to cause it. I knew right then that this thing was evil. I felt so nauseous. It was spiritually attacking me, as well as physically attacking me. In my mind, I could see this demon. I felt this thing that weighed almost 300 pounds, and I weighed about 150. I wasn't sure what was about to see or what was about to happen, and I felt fear start to overwhelm me. I had to stop for a second and regroup. Too late. This thing knew. It had to act now. The lights went out. Two bulbs blew at the same time. I shut my eyes and started praying for the protection of Jesus and the Archangel Saint Michael. The air was so heavy and I felt like I couldn't breathe. I started walking through the place, blessing each room. I made it to the bedroom and I walked to the side of the bed and was shoved very hard onto it. I spoke loudly. "In the name of Jesus, I demand you to stop. I command you to go back to hell where you came from. You are no longer welcome here. This is my home, and you are not allowed here. You are no longer allowed to harm anyone ever in this home. Now go, in the name of Jesus, be gone." The whole room was lighter. The weight was lifted. As I used oil to anoint each door and window, I heard faint squawks. I had no idea where it was coming from, nor what was making the noise. I just kept doing it and praying till I couldn't hear it anymore. Nowadays, I feel the presence of a ghost from time to time, but nothing evil. Nothing has moved since. And you should know one thing. These things are real. Our realms are closer than you think, and we should all be careful what we dabble in. Someone had invited that thing into this apartment, and it wasn't wanting to go anywhere. Just remember, there is a high power, and we as humans don't have to remain victims. If by telling this helps one person, I feel the backlash from a million will be worth it. Stay blessed and safe, and thanks for letting me share this.
Wow.
Yeah.
Angel's story, well, that still kind of maybe almost feels like a Night Hag type stuff.
Exactly. It's one of the reasons I was interested in having Brad do this one, since him and I, through the past of the show, we talked a lot about Night Hags and things like that. And in fact, he's got some new ones that have been happening. I knew he could come across this real because he's been through it.
Yeah. I mean, I really do feel like that, and I've never had a night hag, but I just really feel in my bottom of my whatever it is that they are entities that feed off of fear.
Mm-hmm.
And so they do whatever they have to do to get you to feel fear so that they can feed off of it.
Yeah, they are able to manipulate electronics, able to get up enough energy to push you or things like that just to get you enough to be scared.
Yep.
Very, very interesting thought indeed.
And, I mentioned to you before the show I was reading through The Complete Secret Cipher of the Euphonauts by Alan Greenfield. Mm-hmm. And in the Terry Wrist, there's a second interview in that book, and in the Terry Wrist talks about the entities feeding off your fear.
We keep finding that, man. The things we keep talking about, we see it later in a documentary or a book or from someone. It's
so,
a lot of synchronicities here.
It's just, again, you and I have talked about it. It's not like we don't have necessarily new ideas. They're new to us, and then we find things that reinforce them.
Mm-hmm. So very, very interesting. Thank you, Jerry, for being brave enough to send in a second story, and this one is incredibly compelling.
Phenomenal.
And thank you, Brad, for portraying that for us. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. We got to get out of here. It's just, what an episode, man. But I want to encourage you guys to send in your listener stories to us to fearscapepodcast@gmail.com. Please do that. And then, you know, if you're wanting to know a little bit more about us and things that we do or whatever, go to fearscapepodcast.com. There you'll find links to our social media, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. Those are all at Fearscape Pod, and as well as Fearscape Media, our YouTube venture where we've got Fearscape Unhinged, and anything video that we decide to do is all on Fearscape Media. So that's youtube.com/Fearscape Media. But we've got a few other things on the website as well.
Yep. So we've got a great store. We've got some really awesome t-shirt designs out there. We continue to come up with more. All of our t-shirt designs are available on other products such as mugs or shirts. They are on shirts, but mugs or totes or phone cases and even masks.
We have the masks now. I know that's the trendy thing to do during all this COVID, but I mean, hey, if it helps you stay safe because you're like, well, you know what? I like that blanket huggers.
Yeah.
Design. I'll wear a mask wearing that.
Well, what I think is really cool is our partner that we use for t-shirts, that does our masks. For every mask that you buy, they donate a medical grade mask, to an organization that helps, frontline workers.
That's fantastic. Yeah. So absolutely get on there. Help us. That helps us fund certain things or pay for, things to help us push the podcast as far as we can. Revenue we receive from those shirts. But another way you can support us is through our Patreon.
Yep. Jumping off point, fearscapepodcast.com. Just click on the menu and go to Patreon. And from there, there's several different tiers. You can get with each tier, you get the opportunity to get a free, Fearscape sticker.
That's right.
Put it on your laptop, your car,
your nipples,
whatever. whatever floats your boat. And then, also at a certain level, you also get a free t-shirt. Mm-hmm. We're looking at doing some private content. So, you get an access to our private Facebook group. So anyways, it's just,
yeah, Patreon's growing. I mean, there's always going to be new things that we'll be adding for our people that are Patreon only.
Yeah. So again, like Stefan said, every little bit helps, to help us to do some things. And once this kind of, quarantine lockdown is more free, we're hoping to actually do some trips out to like Point Pleasant to do an episode out there and some other things. So hopefully, some more, let's say in the field episodes are coming. And so every little t-shirt, mask, or Patreon helps us to be able to pay for those trips.
Absolutely. And so once again, that's fearscapepodcast.com. So, get out there. Make sure to rate and review wherever you listen to podcasts. Make sure to share this podcast. The more people know, the more people know.
Yep.
Essentially.
The more you know, the more you grow.
The more you know. But we're going to get out of here. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. This has been Stefan, and I will catch y'all on the flip side.
This has been Josh. The truth is out there.
And remember, folks, hold those blankets extra tight. Things tend to get spooky when you listen to Fearscape. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
I'm so glad you were able to join us for that horrifying discussion. I hope they didn't frighten you too much. Tune in next week for even more research into the nightmarish and haunting creeps and spooks that we tell ourselves don't exist, but we know they do. Make sure you have your blankets, that you hold them extra tight. Next time on Fearscape.